Next, we have our advocacy and policy report. And as the title says, it's really been a record year for advocacy on behalf of the blind of America. And in that advocacy, we're prepared to use all of the tools at our disposal. As a civil rights movement, we're prepared to be as tough or as kind as it takes. And we will never sell out blind people. Part of our work demands long hours, a lot of behind-the-scenes work that is too extensive to cover even in the presidential report. We've had a long history of being well-recognized and well-prepared to be in front of the United States Congress. And a big reason that we can continue that reputation and that tradition is our executive director for advocacy and policy. He will be joined here by our president from Colorado, who has been carrying a significant amount of our advocacy work, especially around one particular issue. And there's a team of advocacy folks, specifically 50,000 of them out there. But the gentleman that I'm going to invite to give the advocacy and policy report is the one who has primary responsibility for making sure that the National Federation of the Blind is what comes to mind whenever there's a hint of discussion about blindness in the halls of power, and he's doing an outstanding job at that. Here's John Paray.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
All right. Thank you, President Riccobono. All right, thank you. When it comes to advocacy, the National Federation of the Blind has an impressive array of tools in our toolbox. We can have meetings, make phone calls, publish editorials, send emails and letters, write blogs and articles, and post content to Facebook and Twitter. We can also have informational protests, bring litigation, or engage in civil disobedience. Most importantly, we have our membership. It is all of you who stand ready to advocate for our fellow members. It is your sacrifice of time, your commitment to equality, and your coordination across chapters, affiliates, and with President Riccobono that makes us so successful. Along with using the right tool at the right time, it's helpful to engage in systematic escalation. A good example of this is our work on the quiet car issue. When this issue initially arose, we called and wrote car companies and their trade associations. Next, we went to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They said they could not work on the issue unless Congress passed a law authorizing the work. So we went to Congress, but Congress was not interested. We persisted with social media, op-eds, informational protests, and even a presentation to the United Nations in Geneva. Soon we had the full attention of car companies, the Department of Transportation, and the U.S. Congress. Not long after that, the President of the United States was signing the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act into law. However, the regulations soon stalled, and we had to re-engage several steps of the escalation methodology. I'm pleased to announce that the final regulation for the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act was put into effect on September 5th, 2017. This regulation requires that all hybrid and electric cars manufactured on or after September 1st, 2020 make a safe level of sound. In some cases, it is necessary to push the escalation methodology to its limit. On February 15th, I found myself traveling to Washington, D.C. to witness the House vote on H.R. 620, the so-called ADA Education and Reform Act. We had met 2 days earlier with Congressman Steny Hoyer and other members of the House of Representatives, and knew that it was unlikely that we had enough votes to stop the bill. For those of you who are new to the National Federation of the Blind, this bill dramatically erodes the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the National Federation of the Blind vigorously opposes it. Just before entering the Capitol, I learned that several ADAPT members were also there and that they planned to chant their opposition to the bill. In my mind, I was running through all of the opposition measures that we had already taken towards this legislation. President Riccobono had sent a letter to every member of Congress and published an article in The Hill. We had passed a national resolution and sent it to Congress. Thousands of you had made phone calls and sent emails and even personally traveled to Washington, D.C. to meet with your member of Congress. But Congress was not listening. I had to make a quick decision. Was it time for civil disobedience? Should I join in with the chanting? I pride myself on being a law-abiding citizen, and I have never been arrested. When the time came, I began to chant. It was chaos. The Speaker of the House yelled for order and for the police to remove us. We kept chanting. The police moved in. They said that we had seconds to leave or that we would be arrested. Several left, but I did not. I kept chanting. Moments later, a police officer grabbed me, yanked me into the hallway, and said I was under arrest. 16 others were also arrested. We were taken to a nearby jail, booked, and fingerprinted. The process was very slow. I was there for 8 hours. We were given only water, but the biggest problem was not having my cell phone. Do you know how hard it is to be in police custody and off the grid at the same time? I was charged with disrupting the United States Congress. The charges have now been dismissed, but they were... I'm glad about that, too. They have now been dismissed, but they were absolutely accurate. I did disrupt the United States Congress when it was trying to remove disability rights protection from the law. The National Federation of the Blind will not be silent. We will be heard. The National Federation of the Blind will not let Congress dismantle our civil rights. We will fight. H.R. 620 was passed by the House and was sent to the Senate. 43 senators have since signed a letter of opposition, which means that the Senate does not have the 60 votes needed for cloture. For the moment, we have stopped this bill, but there's still lots of work to do. All right. The Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act was passed by the Senate Judiciary Committee on May 10th. The Marrakesh Treaty itself was passed by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee 12 days later. And on June 28th, at approximately 7:36 p.m. Eastern Time, in case you weren't watching, both of these items were unanimously passed by the United States Senate. Scott LaBar will be going into both of these items in more detail in a few minutes. Our space available language was included in the National Defense Authorization Act that passed on May 24th. The language was also included for the first time ever in the Senate National Defense Authorization Act that was passed on June 18th. We expect the final version of the National Defense Authorization Act to permit all veterans with a service-connected permanent disability rated as total to be able to participate in the Space Available program operated by the Department of Defense. This change is a direct result of the advocacy of the National Federation of the Blind. To all veterans, we thank you for your service, and we hope that this legislation can be a small token of our appreciation. We continue to make progress on the Accessible Instruction Material in Higher Education Act. We have 82 co-sponsors in the House and 3 in the Senate. Also, the entire content of the Aim High Act has been incorporated into the House Higher Education Reauthorization Act. We continue to make progress on the Access Technology Affordability Act. We have 78 co-sponsors of the House and 10 in the Senate. We continue to make progress on the Transitioning to Integrated and Meaningful Employment Act. We have 47 co-sponsors in the House. We have also developed an excellent relationship with the National Council on Disability and Neil Romano, as you just heard, and also with the National Down Syndrome Society. On May 22nd, we worked with the National Association of Blind Merchants to conduct a Washington seminar-styled fly-in, specifically focused on Randolph Shepherd issues. We had over 100 participants from around the country who came to Washington to meet with their members of Congress. Let's take a minute to talk about NFB Newsline. As many of you know, NFB Newsline is what first introduced me to the National Federation of the Blind. NFB Newsline is the largest, most effective, accessible newspaper service for the blind anywhere in the world. It was conceived, designed, and implemented by the blind for the blind. NFB Newsline is available in 45 states plus the District of Columbia. It serves 118,900 subscribers, has 374 domestic newspapers, 13 international newspapers, 32 breaking news sources, and 68 magazines. Over the past year, NFB Newsline subscribers have enjoyed over 34 million minutes of news, made over 2 million calls, received over 2.5 million emailed articles, logged onto our web portal over 4 million times, and accessed our mobile app over 400,000 times. As far as enhancements, we had hoped by now to have the interface to the Amazon Echo available that was mentioned at last year's convention. We did run into some technical issues. We have pretty much resolved those issues, and you can expect the interface to NFB Newsline on the Amazon Echo to be available approximately at the end of this year. And probably the most dramatic improvement that President Riccobono announced just yesterday, and that will be the addition of the core functions of KNFB Reader into NFB Newsline, making the NFB Newsline and KNFB Reader the most comprehensive access method to all print information available in the world. As you can see, we are making progress in many areas of civil rights for the blind through our advocacy and legislation, but there is still much more work we need to do. We will not rest until blind parents have access to accessible instructional material in an accessible format. We will not rest until we can get access technology in a format that we need. We will not rest until subminimum wages for workers with disabilities is a thing of the past. We will not rest until autonomous vehicles are fully accessible to the blind. We will not rest until the rights medical devices are accessible. We will not rest until the rights of guide dog owners are protected everywhere, and we will not rest until the rights of blind parents are protected and guaranteed. We are the National Federation of the Blind. We reject low expectations. We refuse to be defined by our blindness, and we will live the lives we want. The advocacy and policy team thanks you from the bottom of our heart. It is a privilege to serve you. We look forward to doing more in the coming year. Our next speaker, I want to introduce our next speaker. The next speaker is, the chair of our PAC committee. You've heard from him. He is the president of the National Association of Blind Lawyers. He is the president of the NFB of Colorado, and he led our delegation to Marrakesh and has led all of our Marrakesh activities and has led us to the point where it was ratified last week. Please welcome Scott Labar.
Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express?
All aboard!
To Marrakesh, all on board.
Thank you so much, John. You're going to make it very difficult for me to follow you. You got them all riled up, and now I might just put them back to sleep. They might miss door prizes, and all other terrible kinds of things might happen. I've been thinking about what to say about this whole Marrakesh project. And I must admit, maybe for one of the very few times in my life, I've been largely speechless and not knowing what to say, because the enormity of what we have accomplished is something with which I'm still sort of grappling on both a personal and organizational level. But first, I really need to start by thanking a number of people. I want to thank Jim Gashel, who was my first boss, my first mentor, and taught me a thing or two about legislative and policy advocacy. I want to thank, from our advocacy team in particular, Gabe Cazares, because He really did a lot of hard work in calling members of the Senate and going to Washington for countless meetings and really helped the effort. And before Gabe was Lauren McClarney, who was working with me on this project. I want to thank Dr. Maurer, who in 2009, believe it or not, asked me to start working on this project. And he said to me, well, there's this treaty proposal, and it'll probably never go anywhere, but go see if you can do something with it. And of course, I have to thank my wife, Anna Heat, and my kids, Alexander and Emily, because without them supporting me, I could not have been available to get this work done. I've been on a lot of airplanes over the last 9+ years to get this project done. I've literally, I think, given years to this project in terms of real time. So you know the news, because John told you, and yesterday President Riccobono told you, that last Thursday, on the 28th of June, the United States Senate adopted a resolution of ratification, unanimously ratifying the Marrakesh Treaty. And at the same time adopted unanimously S-2559, which is the Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act. So how did we get here? Now, there's still some more work that we need to accomplish, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But how did we get here? Copyright law for a long time has posed as a barrier to our right to access information. That is because prior to these laws, we had to get the permission of the copyright holder to produce a work into an accessible format. That permission was either very hard to get and very slow, or sometimes we couldn't get it at all, because it is a violation of copyright law to make any kind of copy of a work, unless there is an exception and limitation to that copyright law. So the first thing we did, again under Jim Gashel's leadership and Dr. Maurer's, back in 1996, is we got the Chafee Amendment adopted, which exactly, which allowed us to create accessible copies here in the U.S. without the permission of the copyright holder. Now, until Marrakesh came along, only 57 countries throughout the world had that kind of exception. There are 195 UN-recognized nations. The other problem was that we could not share accessible copies across international borders. And that is why the National Federation of the Blind joined the World Blind Union in 2008 in an effort to create a treaty to address this issue. Mr. Gashel participated in a meeting at Knowledge Ecology International where they sat down and actually drafted the first text of the Marrakesh, what would become the Marrakesh Treaty proposal. That text was officially tabled with the World Intellectual Property Organization in 2009 before the Standing Committee on Copyright and Related Rights in Geneva. And then the real work began. Several meetings of the Standing Committee were specifically devoted to working on this treaty proposal. There was a lot of opposition. The reason there was a lot of opposition is because this was the first international copyright treaty proposal that dealt exclusively with consumers' rights. Any other time previously, when a copyright treaty was on the table, it mostly granted rights to rights holders and maybe threw in a few things for the consumers. This treaty was all about the consumer. And as you heard Jose Vieira say this morning. It combined copyright principles with human rights principles. This was like an alien landing in your hometown and scaring the heck out of you. That's what copyright holders, rights holders thought. They thought this was something that had to be fought, that if they let this happen, then their whole copyright infrastructure would start to crumble. So, on one hand, they said, well, we support the blind and the print disabled, and yeah, we want you to have access to information, but, and they fought us very hard for 4 years, but ultimately, we worked through the issues and got ourselves to the diplomatic conference in Marrakesh. Into June of 2013, when we went to that diplomatic conference, 37 issues still remained unresolved in the treaty text. Through truly a miracle, we finally got the treaty done officially on June 28th, 2013. So everything was good, right? Because the United States supported the treaty at that time. It would be very simple to get it through Capitol Hill, and we would ratify very quickly, right? Wrong. The first problem was the Obama administration took a long time to refer the treaty to the United States Senate. The reason that occurred is because within the government, there were significant battles about what the implementing legislation should say. The instrument of ratification really has never been a problem, because that's straightforward. We either ratify or we don't. But under United States law, when we ratify something, that treaty is not self-executing. It does not automatically change the law. So you have to have legislation to actually change the United States code so it complies with whatever treaty you are ratifying. So finally, on February 10th, 2016, the treaty was referred to the Senate by President Obama, along with what the administration also called the Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act. But there soon became a big problem. The publishers identified a few key issues and objections to that implementation language. So we got the old gang back together, and we started negotiating all over again. And the libraries, quite frankly, were very concerned with the language that the publishers wanted. And we relived all the fights we had in Geneva over many of the very same issues. Well, we battled, and finally, in sometime late in the fall of 2016, we had some consensus language. But then the European Union came out with its treaty ratification and implementation proposals, and the publishers said, no, wait a minute, we like that better. And we want that language. So guess what? We went back to the drawing table and renegotiated everything once again. Finally, in the spring of 2017, we sent some consensus language to the United States Senate Committees on the Judiciary and Foreign Relations. Well, they were sort of busy with appointments and nominations to the Supreme Court and all that kind of stuff, so it got shelved. Finally, they got back to this issue, and they circulated our consensus language with the appropriate relevant governmental agencies, and guess what? There were more objections. Certain agencies wanted language change, so we went back to the drawing table again. Finally, late last year, we got all the language straightened away, and it took a few more months to put the final periods and commas and crossing the T's and dotting the I's, but in March of this year, the Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Dianne Feinstein of California introduced Senate Bill 2559, which was the Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act. And you know the rest of the story. We just got it adopted last week. So what does all of this mean? What it means is we have changed the world. How? Well, what the Marrakesh Treaty is really saying is that the right to access information for the blind and print disabled is an international global right and global priority. We are no longer on the back burner. We have changed the world for the blind and print disabled, and we will never go back to a day where it will be difficult to access information. This treaty also represents the first time that an international instrument was exclusively dedicated to the rights of the blind and print disabled. Yes, I know about the Convention on Rights for Persons with Disabilities, but that is obviously a broader effort. This is specifically about us. And speaking about us, this would not have happened without us. The only way that I and the rest of our team were able to get this done, Dr. Schroeder and John Perret and Gabe and countless others, is because of all of you, because of your support, your faith in us, and your belief that we can change the world. Dr. Tenbrook, our founder, said that we have a right to live in the world. Part of that right is the right to access information. That is fundamental to everything else, because if we don't have information, we do not have access to power. And if we don't have access to power, we do not have the capacity to change the world. Because of the gift Dr. Tenbrook gave us, teaching us that we have the right to live in the world, we are now at a time when we can take those final steps from second-class status and obscurity to true freedom, to true first-class citizenship. That is what we have accomplished. That is the power of the National Federation of the Blind. My brothers and my sisters, let's go forward and keep changing the world. Let's never go back. Let's get on that train, the Marrakesh Express.
I like it. That's great. First of all, thank you, Scott, for the tremendous leadership you provided. And one of the more memorable days I've had in the office of the president is when John Perret called in the morning and said, "Now, I might have an opportunity to get arrested. What do you think?" You know, you get a lot of interesting questions. And as he's already articulated, it was kind of quiet after that. The team did call and say, well, he got arrested. But as he said, it took a long time to hear from him again once he got his cell phone back. Thank you, John, for going all the way for the blind of America. And thank you to our entire advocacy and policy team, both paid and unpaid. Without you, we couldn't get it done. So congratulations to all of us.